For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. Today is March the 3rd, and we are beginning Parshas Yosef, page 394. Parshas Yisro has two parts. The first part is the story of Yisro coming to the Jewish people and giving his famous advice to Moshe Rabbeinu that Moshe should not be the only member of the judicial system of the Jewish people. That there should be a hierarchy of lower courts and higher courts leading up to Moshe Rabbeinu. And his advice is accepted. Moshe checks with Hashem, and Hashem says it's a good idea. And because of that, because Yisro gave advice, and it was accepted as good advice, therefore a parsha is named after him. He's forever known as Yisro, and he actually... His name, he has many names. One of his names is Yester, without the Vav at the end, and because his advice was accepted, the Vav got tacked on. He got an extra letter in his name, Yisro. We'll have to examine that later on, why the extra Vav for Yisro. But that's the first half of Parshas Yisro. The second half of Parshas Yisro is the Jews receiving the Torah on Har Sinai. Since we are reading the Torah, then the story of the Jews receiving the Torah, you would think, is the most important story in the Torah. Because we wouldn't be reading the Torah if it wasn't for that story. So everything else, Bereishis, getting out of Egypt, Moshe's death, the blessings, whatever else you're going to say about the Torah, but it's hard to think of a more central part of the Torah than the receiving of the Torah itself, because otherwise we couldn't study it at all. So this, therefore, this parasha of Yisro contains within it the most significant event in the Torah. Aside from the fact that, as I've mentioned to you many times, the greatest revelation of Hashem's presence in this world that has ever taken place since the beginning of the world up until our day was the time that we received the Torah on Har Sinai. The fact that it comes in Parashas Yisro on the heels of Yisro's advice to Moshe about the judicial system and Yisro's word being accepted is very, very significant. Everybody knows the Torah is given in Parashas Yisro. So this man, Yisro, turns out to become very famous by association. The issue is even more striking when we consider the fact that there is a major debate, it is unresolved, it's a major debate in the Gemara, when did Yisro come to the Jewish people? Yisro is Moshe's father-in-law, and Yisro lives in Midian. And the Jews have gotten out of Egypt, and Yisro comes to join them. When did that happen? Did that happen as it would seem the Torah presented to us, that Yisro joined the Jewish people prior to the giving of the Torah? Or did Yisro join the Jewish people after the giving of the Torah? This is a debate in the Gemara that is unresolved. There are two opinions, and both opinions bring proofs to their side, and it is left as two opinions.
Well, how about three?
There's always
we
three.
We could have it at the same time.
Well, the reason why it couldn't be at the same time is because Moshe wasn't downstairs when the Torah was given. He was upstairs. Okay. So if they're talking to each other, it must be. So if Yisro came after the Torah was given But the Torah chooses to tell us about Yisro's arrival before the Torah was given. That would seem to indicate that Yisro's arrival and his dealing with Moshe is crucial for us to be aware of prior to receiving the Torah, even though chronologically that may not be the way it happened. So whether it happened that way or not in real time, but for us, as we're studying it, it is important to first study about Yisro and his advice to Moshe, and then about the Torah. Moreover, I'll get to your question in just a moment, moreover, even according to the opinion that Yisro came prior to the giving of the Torah, but his advice to Moshe was certainly after the giving of the Torah. That is undisputed. So Yisro, we're not sure when he came. Did he come before the Torah was given or after the Torah was given? But the advice that he gave to Moshe when he noticed the long line in front of Moshe for people waiting for their cases to be adjudicated, and he said, you can't do this. You've got to have a hierarchy of the court system, and his advice was accepted. That certainly happened after the giving of the Torah, and yet the Torah chooses to tell us about it prior to telling us about the giving of the Torah. Which means that as far as we're concerned in the study, it is important to study this first. So that has to inform us as we move along within the first half of Yisro, the fact that the chronology isn't as important as the methodology of the study. That we need to study this first, then study about the giving of the Torah. Any question?
Just a question. I always wondered when you say that Yisro joined the Jewish people, do you mean just physically or he actually became a Jew?
Physically joining the Jewish people. He does become a Jew, but that is not the discussion of before or after Matan Torah is when did he physically show up?
Oh, okay.
Do you think maybe Moshe wrote it down in that order to give cover to his father-in-law?
Well, Moshe wouldn't have had a choice. Hashem would have told him how to write it down.
But Hashem told him to do it before or after?
It could be that Hashem told it to him. That is a good suggestion. That perhaps it was to show honor to Moshe's father-in-law.
And up until that time, his wife and children were never with him?
Correct. Well, they were never means since he left Midian.
Right. They started going and then they said go.
Right.
Down.
Okay. We're gonna. That's going to be recounted here again. But yeah. That. So it's been. You have to take into account a year of plagues. And then, what's that?
Then they missed.
Yeah, and then they left. And now they come to Har Sinai. So if Yisro comes before the giving of the Torah, then Moshe is away from his family for a little over a year. If Yisro comes after the giving of the Torah, it's at least a year and 6 months, maybe a little longer. So let's begin. Page 394. Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan, Chosei Moshe. And Yisro, the Kohen of Midyan, what does a Kohen mean?
Priest.
Okay, they write over here a minister, the minister of Midyan. The reason they wrote minister is because they don't want to use the word priest, because priest implies some sort of a religious leader, even though one could argue a minister is also a religious leader. The commentaries say that here the word Kohen does not mean a priest, it means a position of leadership. He wasn't a king, but he was recognized as a leader in Midian, or maybe the leader in Midian. So Yisro, the Kohen of Midian, the father-in-law of Moshe, the word Chosein, you should be aware, in Hebrew, can either mean father-in-law or son-in-law. It means the relationship between a father-in-law and son-in-law. It's the same word both ways. So a chasan, which we say means a groom, it doesn't really mean a groom, it means a son-in-law. Just like a kala, which we say means a bride, it doesn't really mean a bride, it means a daughter-in-law. The words literally mean son-in-law, daughter-in-law. That's the literal translation of chasan and kala. Mechutanim is a Yiddish word, which does not have an English equivalent.
So, yeah.
Right?
But it's not from the Hebrew?
It's not from the Hebrew. Well, no, it derives from the Hebrew. It derives from the Hebrew, because you have the it comes from the word chasan or chatan, right? Yeah, no, it definitely derives from there.
Oh, okay.
But there's no derivation grammatically in Hebrew that would come up with that. That is a Yiddish derivation.
Oh, okay.
As Yiddish, the Yiddish language has conjugations and derivations that that no other languages do. None of the languages I know, I should know languages, that Hebrew and English don't do.
What about mother-in-law? How do you see that?
That's a good question. Whether Kala would also be the name for mother-in-law, I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Just like Chasan goes both ways. I don't know if that's true for Kala. I don't know.
Right. Okay.
It's a good question.
Mother-in-laws are special.
But it's not the same word for Kala and mother-in-law, right?
No, it might be. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Yisro,
the daughter-in-law.
Yisro, the Kohen of Midian, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard all that God did for Moshe, Uli Yisrael Amo, and for Yisrael, his nation. Kiyotzi Hashem es Yisrael miMitzrayim, for Hashem had taken the Jews out of Egypt. So this pasuk is needs to be understood a little bit, because what does it mean? He heard all that Hashem did for Moshe and for the Jews, his nation, for Hashem had taken the Jews out of Egypt. So is that all he heard? He heard he had taken them out of Egypt. If that's all he heard, it seems somewhat redundant. He heard all that Hashem did for Moshe and for the Jews, his nation, for Hashem had taken the Jews out of Egypt. So tell me, he heard that Hashem took the Jews out of Egypt. It seems that he heard more things. He heard everything, as it says, everything that Hashem had done for Moshe and for the Jews, his nation. And then the verse chooses to emphasize, for Hashem had taken the Jews out of Egypt. So the Rashi here tells us that when it says he heard, so what did he hear? He heard about the splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. He heard the splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. And he heard that which Hashem did for Moshe and for the Jews, his nation. But, however, the most important thing that he heard is that Hashem had taken the Jews out of Egypt. Rashi also adds in that he heard about the man. That's something else. And he heard about the well, the be'er, the well. So he heard about these things as well. And he heard that he had taken them out of Egypt. So he had heard all the details of the various miracles that Hashem had done for the Jewish people. This is what motivated Yisro. Vayikach Yisro Chosein Moshe, and Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, took Es Tzipora Eshes Moshe, Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, which of course is his daughter, Achar Shiluchah, after she had been sent away. Ve'es Shnei Vaneha, and her two sons, Asher Shemo Echad Gershom, that the name of one was Gershom. Why was his name Gershom? Ki Amar, for he had said, meaning Moshe had said, Ger Hoyisi, I was a sojourner, I was a stranger, Be'eretz Nachriya, in a foreign land. Ve'shemo Echad Eliezer, the name of one was Eliezer, Ki Elokei Ovi Be'ezri, for the God of my father was in my help, how does it say it over here, was...
Came to my aid,
okay. Vayati leni mecher of Paro, and he saved me from the sword of Paro. Vayavo Yisro Chosein Moshe, and Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, came. Uvanav and his sons, meaning Moshe's sons, the Ishto and his wife, meaning Moshe's wife, El Moshe to Moshe. El Amidbar to the wilderness, Ashahu Chonasham, that he, meaning Moshe, was camped there. Har Ho'elokim, at the mountain of God. And we'll stop right here for a moment. Now, there is a difficulty in translating this series of psukim, this series of verses. In Pasuk Beis, in verse 2, where the verb is vayikach, and he took, so Yisro took Tzipora after she had been sent away, and her two sons, and it gives us the names and why they were called what they were called. And then it says, and Yisro, the father of Moshe, came, and the children and wife of Moshe came to Moshe to the wilderness that he was camped there. So when it says in Pasuk Beis in verse 2, Vayikach, and he took, what does that mean? There are two possible ways of understanding this. I want you to look at those verses and see which one, if either one, makes more sense than the other. The two possible ways of reading this are, Yisro took Tzipporah. Where did he take her? Took her to where?
Oh, I see.
He took her with him to Moshe. Mm-hmm. But the Torah interjects, what was she doing with Yisro in the first place? We were never told that Tzipporah was with Moshe. The last we heard of Tzipporah, Moshe had loaded her up on a donkey to go back to Egypt. The Torah doesn't say what happened on the way back to Egypt, that in fact she went back. We'll talk about that in a moment. But so the Torah interjects, Yisro took Tzipporah and came to Moshe. But in the middle, the Torah doesn't tell us, well, he took her because she had been sent away by Moshe, and there were her two sons, these were their names, this is the reason, this is why they were called what they were called, and they came to Moshe. But the verb, vayikach, and he took, means he took them to go to Moshe. The other way to explain this is, Yisro took Tzipporah after Moshe sent her away. You want to know where Tzipporah went after Moshe sent her away? She went back to Yisro. Yisro took her in, along with her two sons. And their names were, and this is why they were called these names. Now a new thing. Pasuk, hey, verse 5. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, and Moshe's sons and wife, came to Moshe in the wilderness. You follow? Mm-hmm. Is Vayikach a prelude to Vayavo? He took and he came. Or is Vayikach, he took separate from Vayavo, he came. He took them. When did he take them? After Moshe sent them away. That's one discussion. Now, a brand new thing. They came to Moshe. You can read it both ways. Both really fit into the verses. We learned back in Parashat Shmos, when Moshe loaded up his wife and son onto a donkey to go to Egypt, and remember, they came to his wife and sons, and he came to an inn, and what happened at that inn? Better recall?
She said,
Moshe was almost killed. How was Moshe almost killed?
By a snake,
because
he didn't circumcise
his second son Eliezer. Right. And we talked about then that it wasn't that Moshe didn't believe in circumcising his son, it's that he needed to leave Midian because Hashem told him to leave, and he couldn't leave because he needed to give a bris, a circumcision, to his son. But if he would have done that, he wouldn't be able to leave because traveling would have been dangerous. So the question was, do you listen to what Hashem said, which is to leave, or do you listen to what Hashem said, which is to circumcise your son? So he decided to go. He figured that was what Hashem wanted me to do right now, and he was correct. But the problem is, when he got to the inn, he should have at that moment circumcised his son, and instead, as Rashi explains, he was involved in setting up lodging for his family first before he circumcised his son. So the snake came and began to swallow him up. So Tzipporah understood that the problem was that his son was uncircumcised, and she took a stone. There's a difference of opinion whether she did the circumcision or she instructed someone else to do the circumcision. This discussion, of course, is the discussion in the Gemara about whether a woman is able to halachically perform circumcision on a baby boy. So there is a discussion whether Tzipporah actually performed it or not. But either way, either she performed it or had someone else do it. Either way, and that saved Moshe's life. So that was his second son, Eliezer. That was the bris. So we found that about her over there. But then it just says that Moshe met Aaron. Where did Moshe meet Aaron?
Right
over here, at the mountain of Hashem. And they met each other, they embraced, and they go to Egypt. And there's no mention of Tzipporah and her sons. Doesn't say anything. So as far as we know, they're still with Moshe. Now, I told you back then that they were no longer with Moshe, but the Torah doesn't tell us. Here is where the Torah actually says explicitly they were no longer with Moshe. And why were they no longer with Moshe? So the Medrash says, we talked about this then, that Moshe meets Aaron at the mountain of Hashem, And Aaron says to Moshe Rabbeinu, who are these people who are with you, this woman and these boys? He says, this is my wife and these are my boys. This is my wife that I married when I was in Midian, and these are our children. So Aaron says, and where are you taking them? And Moshe says, I'm taking them to Egypt. And Aaron says to Moshe, we have enough trouble with the people who are already in Egypt, who we need to get out of Egypt. It is not helping anybody to bring more people into Egypt that we're all now going to have to get out of Egypt.
Yeah.
So Moshe realizes his brother is correct, and so he tells Zipporah to go back. So she takes the boys, and she goes back to her father, to Yisro.
By herself with the children.
That is correct. Now, I don't know if they had... if they had servants with them, perhaps they did. Maybe they were sent with him. I don't know. Doesn't say. So she goes back with her sons to Midian, and Yisro, of course.
Sorry, where is Midian?
Where is Midian?
Yeah,
that's a good question. So Midian is somewhere south of present day Israel. It's somewhere in the desert down there. It's not clear to me whether Midian is. I don't know if it's. There are different suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, the Jews are going to have a war with Midian and virtually wipe them out. So it seems that they are somewhere over there in the south of Israel, where you have various nations there. You have Edom over there, you have Moab over there, and Midian is over there as well, somewhere in there. When I say south of Israel, I always forget about this. The present, I've told you this before, the present day state of Israel, which has a southern part that goes all the way down to an arm of the Red Sea, is not biblically Israel. That is, we don't have any biblical claim to that part of the land. The truth is, the southern border of the biblical state of Israel is around Beersheba, a little bit south of Beersheba, not all the way down to Eilat.
Mm-hmm.
So down there is already other nations' lands. Mm-hmm. Depending on, you know, who lived there when. So that's when I say
so
south of
it. Being a Midian, you know?
Yeah, it's, yeah. Possibly. I don't know. I don't know what it was around there. Somewhere in there was Midian. So she went back, and Yisro, of course, took her in. And she remained there until now, when Yisro hears all that happened with the Jewish people. And now he goes and takes Zipporah and her two sons to Moshe back at Har HaElokim, at the mountain of God. So that is where Moshe and Zipporah had separated to begin with, and now this is where they're going to be reunited. However, are they actually reunited?
No. Well, they couldn't be.
Because?
Doesn't Moshe have to stay in a different state because he doesn't know when God's going to call upon him?
Okay. Right. So
that's what Miriam has complained of.
That's right. So now the question is, although they are reunited, at least in person, they're able to see each other, but do they reunite as husband and wife? This is depends on whether one understands that Yisro came before the giving of the Torah or after the giving of the Torah. At the giving of the Torah, as we're going to study later on, all men and women of the Jewish people, all husbands and wives, are instructed to separate for 3 days prior to the giving of the Torah. After the Torah is given, there is a direct command for all the husbands and wives to return to each other. And there's a direct command to Moshe that he is not to return to his wife. That he remains perpetually in the state of receiving the Torah. In the receiving of the Torah, husbands and wives must be separated from each other. And Moshe remains perpetually in that state. Now, we all know that we as Jews do not believe in that as an ideal. We disagree with those religions that believe in that, and that is an ideal state to be in. But Moshe, as was just mentioned, because he is in regular contact with Hashem, therefore he has to remain separate. So, if Yisro came with Zipporah and the boys before the giving of the Torah, then there would have been a period of time that Moshe and his wife would have been reunited prior to the giving of the Torah. Not that long, because they came to the mountain of Hashem. The Jews only got there on the first day of Sivan, and the Torah is given on the sixth day of Sivan. So we're not talking about that many days. But there would have been a few days where Moshe and his wife would have been reunited. But then the Torah was given, and then they're no longer able to remain together as husband and wife. If Yisro only shows up after the giving of the Torah, then Moshe and his wife are never fully reunited, because once the Torah is given, Moshe cannot go back to his wife. So we are not talking about Moshe and his wife being reunited in a way that that the storybooks would say, and they lived happily ever after. That's not what we're talking about over here. This does lead to the Lashon Hara of Miriam and Aaron, as was just mentioned, because this is the point that Miriam and Aaron are bothered by, that Moshe remains separated from his wife. This also plays a role in the story, if you know about this, fine, otherwise don't worry about it, we'll get to it later in the Chumash, of Eldad and Medad, which is in Parshas Bahaloscha. All of these, all of those stories play together with this question of Tzipora and Moshe. So Yisro comes with Tzipora and her two sons to Moshe. Here the Torah tells us the names of the sons. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, and Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, it tells us the names of the sons, Gershom and Eliezer, and it tells us why they were named Gershom and Eliezer. Gershom is because Ger HaYisi, I was a stranger in a strange land, and Eliezer because the God of my father came to my aid and he saved me from the sword of Paro. When did Hashem save Moshe from the sword of Paro?
With the marble.
When he had to run away from what?
From Paro, because he killed someone. And
okay, so Moshe had killed the Egyptian and Paro therefore wanted to kill Moshe, and the Medrash tells us that he was ready to kill him, have him beheaded for what he had done. And Hashem caused Moshe's neck to become like marble, and the sword wouldn't cut his neck. And Moshe was able to escape. So he was literally saved from the sword of Paro. And he named his son Eliezer, God has come to my aid to save me from the sword of Paro. We don't know Eliezer's name until here. We know Moshe has two sons, but we don't know what the second son's name is. This is the place where the Torah tells us Eliezer's name. The name Eliezer does appear once earlier in the Torah. Where is that?
It's Abraham's slave.
Right. His name is Eliezer. His name is only mentioned once. Only one time. He's usually called Ha'eved, the slave. But in one place it says Eliezer in Parashas Lech Lecha. But here we have the same name, and the Torah gives us the reason why Moshe named him Eliezer. Gershom, the older son, we already heard his name earlier in the Torah. In Parashas Shmos, when he married Tzipporah, it says that he had a son, and he named him Gershom. Does the Torah back then tell us why he named him Gershom? The answer is yes. Does the Torah tell us back then exactly the same words as it says over here? For he said, I was a stranger in a strange land? Yes. The Torah says exactly the same words. Let's look at that. Look back in Parashat Shmos and you will see deja vu all over again. Page 300. Batelet Bain, she had a son, Vayikra Shemo Gershom, and he called his name Gershom. Ki Amar, now we have an exact quote. Ki Amar, for he had said, Ger HaYisi, I was a stranger, I was a sojourner, Beretz Nachriah, in a strange land, in a foreign land. Exactly the same words as over here. Which of course begs the question,
why?
Right.
People name their children over something that happened to them?
Okay. We've talked about this before, that they did name for, not, I mean, this is pretty benign compared to other things they've named for. Miriam means?
Bitter.
She was named for the bitter slavery. That's what she was named for. What's that?
How do we
understand? So we talked about that before. I don't want to get sidetracked with that right now. Here we have Gershom and his name explained to us twice.
Maybe just because if Eliezer's name is going to be explained to us, then Gershom should also be.
Okay. So you're saying once we're getting into the names of Moshe's children, tell us. I don't know of any other case like this where we have names repeated, of course, but where the reason for the name being given, for it being repeated, I don't remember anything else like this. So the question is, and Dina might be right, that there is a simple answer, which is that since the Torah is talking about Moshe's children, so it gives us the full picture. But the Torah doesn't need to do that. The Torah could have left out the reason last time. And when we got to it over here, we know the reason. He named his second son Eliezer, for Hashem had saved me from the sword of Paro. Why did he name his first son Eliezer?
Yeah, right.
Hashem saved me from the sword of Paro.
Right.
Yeah. Why did he wait till he had a second son to name for being saved from the sword of Paro? So the Torah before told us that Paro wanted to kill Moshe for having killed the Egyptian. It seems that the killing of the Egyptian wasn't simply murder. It was undermining the entire institution of slavery because he was killing a taskmaster. That wasn't tolerated. One of the impressions says, one of the commentaries says that the reason why he didn't name his first son Eliezer is because when he ran away from Paro and he ran to Midian, he wasn't necessarily safe. He was still at risk of being recaptured. Paro was, after all, a very, very powerful king, and with the greatest military and economic power of the world, and he could have caught up with Moshe in Midian and dragged him back to Egypt. So he wasn't ready to name a son that God saved me from the sword of Paro when he still might be subject to the sword of Paro. So he named his son, I was a sojourner in a strange land. His second son is named after Hashem already tells Moshe that those who wanted to kill you, meaning Dathan and Aviram, are no longer a threat. Because they said they died, which we understand means, doesn't mean they died, it means they lost all of their clout with Paro, for they lost all of their possessions, their money. So that's when he feels safe and he's able to name his son Eliezer. But if he's not going to name him Eliezer, he's going to name him because he was a sojourner in a strange land. In what way was he a sojourner? So somebody said, well, he was always a stranger. But the thing is that he didn't have the troubles of his brethren. He was in the house of Paro. He grew up fine. He wasn't wandering around looking for bread. He was brought up with plenty. So what does it mean, I was a stranger? I was a sojourner in a strange land. How is he a sojourner in a strange land?
His physical needs.
I had always thought it meant in Midian.
I was saying in Midian. Maybe it's true. No, that's not necessarily wrong. That's a good answer. Your answer is?
Well, his physical needs were met.
Mm-hmm. In Egypt.
But he never fit in.
But not his spiritual.
Okay. So he wasn't really, he was really a stranger even in the house of Paro.
Right. He couldn't be with his people.
Okay.
Well, there's no indication, I don't think, prior to him killing, of associating with the Jewish people, is that?
Well, it says that when he got older, he went out and, yeah, I mean, it's the same incident. He went out and he saw the afflictions of his brothers.
Yeah, but prior to that,
yeah,
there was no association.
Well, except that
his mother and sister.
Right, except his mother and his sister.
Yeah, right.
His mother nursed him for the first 2 years. Yeah.
isn't it a statement that could be said of the whole Jewish people? It's an identification. The whole Jewish people were sojourning in Egypt in a strange land. When Hashem tells Abraham his descendants are going to sojourn, isn't it? Doesn't he use that verb?
Yeah.
So he, like the entire people, was a sojourner.
Okay. Well, if we're going to say that, then we have to say that Moshe was identifying with the Jewish people. When he named his son Gershom, and he says, I was a sojourner in a strange land, it seems that drawing correctly from the Bris Ben Avasarim, the covenant that that Avraham had with Hashem, where it says, Ki ger yez aracha be'eretz lo lahem, your children will be sojourners in a land not their own. So Moshe is building on that phrase and naming his child for that experience, even though Moshe didn't share it with the Jewish people. Not in the way the Jewish people did. He didn't work. He was never whipped for not building the everything properly. So Moshe, in naming his son Gershom, is naming his son for solidarity with the Jewish people. Then he names the second son Eliezer, God save me from the sword of Paro. Here, the Torah emphasizes why Moshe named his son Gershom, which we already know, and then tells us why he named his son Eliezer. Why does the Torah tell us that here? What is so important about knowing why Moshe named his sons? Why tell it to us here? If you're going to tell it to us, you would think the best time to tell it to us is when it happened. Gershom, we already found out why he named him back when he named him. Eliezer, the Torah could have told us when he named Eliezer that he named him Eliezer and why he was named Eliezer. But the Torah doesn't do that. The Torah didn't even tell us his name. The Torah just said there was a bris and that was it. It was only now, all of a sudden, that we find out his name is Eliezer and why. Why is this the best place to tell us about the children of Moshe?
Because this is a reminder of
quite yet.
Okay. So you're suggesting that Moshe, his recognition of what Hashem had done wasn't yet at its height. And the truth is, let's emphasize that point, the major difference between Moshe's first son being born and second son being born is the burning bush. That is the episode that comes between those two children. First, Moshe runs away, meets Zipporah, marries her, has a son named Gershom. Then he becomes a prophet at the burning bush, and he's told to go back and save the Jewish people. Then he has a son named Eliezer. So one is pre-burning bush, which means pre-becoming a prophet, and the other one is post-becoming a prophet. It seems to me, building on what Herman said, it seems to me that the Torah is emphasizing for us, why is it that Moshe is about to be the one who's going to receive the Torah on our behalf? Because Moshe identified with the Jewish people. Moshe didn't go through the slavery like the Jews did, but Moshe, we know, went out to his brothers and he felt their afflictions. He saved a fellow Jew, and because of that he had to run away because he was nearly executed. He names his sons for the experiences of the Jewish people that he experienced on a microcosmic level. Meaning that he says, my first son is Gershom. Why? Because I was a stranger in a land, I was a sojourner in a strange land. Meaning, we Jews were sojourners in a strange land. Then comes the burning bush, and Hashem says to Moshe, go take the Jews out. So as much as Moshe didn't want to do the job, but he knows Hashem's going to take the Jews out. Then he has a second son, and he says, Hashem saved me from the sword of Paro, meaning, Hashem saved me from the sword of Paro, and Hashem is going to save the Jewish people from the sword of Paro as well. His two sons, with their two names, follows the experience of the Jewish people into Egypt and out of Egypt. And they are emphasized here because this is now where Moshe is about to become the receiver of the Torah. It's true he was our leader before this point, the plagues, etc. But all of that, although Moshe was clearly the main force, but remember, Aaron was with him too. It wasn't just one, it wasn't a one-man show. Aaron was there also, although Moshe was clearly the main leader. The Torah is going to be a one-man show. This is where Moshe becomes the Ravan Shel Kol HaNaviim. He is now the head of all prophets. No one will ever receive prophecy the way Moshe receives prophecy. Moshe is going to be elevated to a status that nobody else comes close to. The very part about being separated from his wife points to that. That even his brother and sister, who themselves were lofty people, Aaron and Miriam, but they're not on Moshe's level. Moshe now, he gets catapulted to a place that no one else will ever be. So the Torah is telling us, you should be aware, this doesn't happen because Moshe sits in an ivory tower and meditates all day long. This happens because Moshe identifies with the Jewish people. And Moshe feels for the Jewish people, both in their suffering and in their celebration. The suffering of their slavery, the celebration of getting out of the slavery, and the recognition that, and gratitude to God. All of that is put into the names of Moshe's boys. And that, I believe that's why it's emphasized over here. Yes.
So, Rabbi Pransky, what about Moshe introducing, did he introduce himself at some point as a Mitzri and not as a Yehudi?
Yes.
So,
well, the girls say to Yisro, a Mitzri saved us from the shepherds.
So how did they know that he was a Mitzri?
Yeah.
Because he was dressed up like one.
He must have looked like one.
So he didn't identify himself.
There is a medrash that Moshe was criticized for having looked like an Egyptian.
Oi. Oh, you mean in his clothing?
Well, however, yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Well, if you escape, it's not like you have time to change
your
clothes.
Right. Well, we don't know how much time there was between the time that he escaped and came to Midian. It's unclear. We know there were 40 years from the time Moshe left Egypt till he came back to Egypt. Where were those 40 years spent is not clear. Whether they were primarily with Yisro, whether there was time beforehand, time afterwards, it's not very clear.
But he didn't identify himself. He knew all along who he was.
Yeah, evidently he knew.
It was a long time.
Yeah, it was a long time. So Yisro and Yisro brings Tzipora and brings the two boys to Moshe to the mountain of Hashem. The Gemara says, and Rashi cites it as well, that in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, that the reason why it says El HaMidbar, to the wilderness, is to emphasize the greatness of Yisro, that he was willing to go to Moshe even though he was in the wilderness. He was willing to go, he wanted to join with the Jewish people, even though it was not in a very hospitable place. And he wanted to go anyway, and he went. Now before we go further, I'm going to save this now for the next time. Instead, I would like to end the next last minutes that we have to talk again about the things that Yisro heard. I want to tell you a novel idea which I heard this year from a good friend of mine. The Gemara tells us, as I mentioned to you, that when it says Yisro heard, what happened? The Gemara says, "Mashmu Hashama Uba." What did Yisro hear that made him come to the Jewish people? What got him to come to the Jewish people? So the Medrash says, "It was Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, and the war with Amalek." So the question is that, first of all, the splitting of the sea, we know, was an unbelievable revelation of God. As we've said many times, the second greatest revelation ever. The greatest revelation up to that time, and even today, second to the revelation of the giving of the Torah. So, we can understand why that would be an incentive for someone to join the Jewish people. But the war with Amalek, it's true the Jews won the war, but what is so spectacular about that, that would get Yisro to come to join the Jewish people?
Wiping out all the Egyptians.
Yeah, you would think that's much more.
That would be much more.
Yes, yes.
And he had to be a special person. And evidently, there was something perhaps behind that.
Okay.
That he began to understand Hashem.
Okay, okay. The other question is that it says he heard about the splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. Wouldn't you think that it should say he heard about the splitting of the sea and the defeat of Amalek? The victory of the Jews over Amalek? That's not what it says. It says the war, Milchemes Amalek, the war with Amalek. Somehow it doesn't seem to fit exactly. So my friend, his name is Beryl Daskal, he is an attorney in the New York area, and we were in yeshiva together many, many years ago. And when I spoke to him this year, he told me that he wanted to suggest the following explanation, which I think is a beautiful explanation. The Gemara tells us, you know, Yisro is about to become the first convert. That's what he's about to become. Until now, we don't have any converts, because until the Torah is given, you can't be a convert. There's no Jewish nation yet. We're just children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So you can join a family by marrying into a family, but you can't convert to something until you have a nation. The Torah, the giving of the Torah, is what makes us into a nation, and now you can have a convert. So Yisro is about to become the first convert. The Gemara tells us that we did not accept converts in the days of King David and King Solomon. David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. And why not?
Things were too good. Everyone would want to convert.
Who wouldn't want to convert? We have no way of testing anybody's sincerity. Because, of course, you want to be Jewish if the Jews have all the economic power and all the military power and all the great... Of course, who wouldn't want to be Jewish? That's right. So that doesn't prove anything. But if someone wants to convert at a time when Jews are downtrodden and there's anti-Semitism and the person still wants to convert, that seems to show some degree of sincerity.
But Rabbi...
So that's why we did not accept converts in the days of David HaMelech and Shlomo. That was the rule. We didn't accept them. Because there was no way to know who was sincere and who wasn't. Yeah.
There's expressions that many Jews earlier than this married Gentiles. Before this era.
Before this era here? Yeah, because you were allowed.
Didn't they convert?
Yeah, there were no. It wasn't before this time. It was just a family. Just when someone marries,
right.
Someone says, "I want to be a lishkof." How does someone become a lishkof? You can't jump in the mikvah and come out and say you're a lishkof,
yeah.
Right?
No.
But you can marry someone in the lishkof family and then become part of the lishkof family,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
That's the idea. So before the Torah was given, you could become part of the Jewish family by marrying into the family. Now it's true you had to accept upon yourself to follow all the rules and all, but it was that's the way you joined the Jews.
Yeah.
After the giving of the Torah, the only way to do that is through conversion. But now there is a process called conversion. So what my friend wanted to suggest is that when you had the splitting of the sea, it was such an incredible revelation of God that really we shouldn't have accepted any converts. Because who wouldn't want to be Jewish? The Az Yashir, the Song of the Sea, says explicitly how scared everybody was of us. We were so powerful. Amalek came and attacked, and Amalek was foolish for doing so, but he did it in order to show the Jews aren't so special. Right? The Jews, they're not untouchable. You can attack them, even though they got beaten. So it was the attack of Amalek that now enabled us to accept converts. Because the attack of Amalek brought us down a notch. Until then, after the splitting of the sea, we were on top of the world and no one could touch us, and therefore we shouldn't accept any converts. But the attack of Amalek brought us down a notch, which meant that we could accept a sincere convert. So he wanted to suggest that when it says here that what did Yisro hear that got him to come to the Jewish people, he heard about the splitting of the sea, that's really what got him to come. That was the real incentive. But we wouldn't have let him in. What enabled him being allowed to come is not the victory over Amalek, but the war with Amalek. The fact that Amalek attacked us, brought us down a little bit to the point where we were still able to accept converts. That was his suggestion. But the real incentive for Yisro to join was the splitting of the sea, which is the culmination of getting out of Egypt. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisro Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.